That really begins with the last sentence of verse 37 down through to the end of verse 39. And Saul said unto David, Go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he assayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. I cannot go with these. As David speaks these words, a critical moment has come in this whole experience, not only for David himself personally, but for the entire nation. After 40 days of humiliation at the hands of Goliath, as he paraded up and down unchallenged as the champion of the Philistines, mocking God, mocking Saul, mocking Israel, there is at the last a man to stand in God's name for the honor of God and for the testimony and the honor of God's people in Israel. Fresh out of the sheep pasture, David, and he's still just a teenager at this point, David exudes supreme confidence in God that he can take on this champion and defeat him, silence his blasphemy, and bring deliverance to Israel. This is a passage that never fails to thrill my own soul. We will be thinking a little of David's previous experience of God and how it played into this situation here. But what David knew of God at this point, he's just a young lad, he's still in his teens, and yet his experience of God at this point enabled him to walk into the camp of Israel, tell Saul what to do, and take over as the commander of the armies of Israel. And he's just a lad. But such was his experience of God that that's what David was able to do. Not arrogantly, not proudly, not presumptuously, but simply because of his experience of God and God's power, David takes charge. If ever there was a day in which we need to see that spirit raised again, surely it is today. Where we need to see God raise up men who will take the work of God by the ears, as it were, and set it the right way up, and put things right, and do things right, and say what needs to be said, and do what needs to be done, and where there are Goliaths on the loose, take their head off. We need to pray that God will raise men like that in these times. He is a man, young as he is, but it's hard really to, well, it's easy. Put it this way, it's easy to forget he's still just a lad at this point. Such is the maturity of his faith and his confidence in God, the wisdom and the words that he uses here. He is a man who believes in the cause of God, who sees it clearly. Those memorable words in verse 29 where he silences the carping criticism of his elder brother Eliab. What have I now done? Is there not a cause? David had the cause of God burning in his heart. That's what motivated him to speak as he did in verse 46. As he addresses Goliath, this day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. There's a definition of the cause. that David had espoused here. This is God's business. This is God's work. And anybody that stands up against it, well, they're going to be my enemy. And I'm going to be against them, whether it's Goliath or the Philistines, the champion and the army, I'm against them. Because there's a cause that I see. The cause that God may be known in the earth, that God may be known even by the heathen, recognized as the one true and living God. That was the cause that burned in David's heart. And however it aroused jealousy and disbelief and even slander from his brother, it was a cause that once he had seen it and it had gripped his heart, he couldn't be deflected from it. He wasn't going to be turned aside. He couldn't be talked out of it. He couldn't be persuaded otherwise than what he was determined to do. Because he had seen the cause. You know, it's easy for a Christian to be involved in the work of God and not really see the cause, the true cause. Get caught up with some of the side issues and not really see the heart of the issue. That this is about the Lord's battle. The battle between truth and error, the battle between falsehood and the words of God, the battle between Christ and Satan, this battle that motivated David on this occasion. It wasn't just an ethnic struggle. That's not what motivated David. He wasn't here simply because he had a xenophobia for Philistines and sort of couldn't stand the sight of them. That's not why he was here. Oh, he was going to war with the Philistines. But because of the battle of the Lord, he had his eye on the real issue. And motivated by an understanding of what this was really about, it was to fight the Lord's battle, to honor his name, that he might be known among the heathen, among his own people as well, that he was going to stand and fight. You see, without a clear sight of that cause, we will be like the men of Israel all around David. Well, they knew they should fight. They sort of maneuvered a little bit for a few days here and there in the valley. There's indications of that. And they went out and they shouted a time or two and they got everybody into their place. But there was no battle. They didn't see the cause the way David saw it. There was a bit of saber rattling here and there, a shouting against the enemy, but no real battle till David got there. The man who had a vision for the cause. But I want us to move along in the timeline here to that point that we're considering in this text. And particularly to focus in upon the fact that as he pursues that cause, the battle is the Lord's, and I'm on God's side, and I'm against anybody that's against God. Let a man stand up like Goliath and curse God, I'm his enemy. Let him stand up like Goliath and invoke the idols, I'm his enemy. Because I'm on the Lord's side. But there comes a point in these few verses that we're going to contemplate, there comes a critical point where David is challenged to adopt means and methods that threaten the success of his cause by calling him to rely on something other than the Lord's presence and power. There's something else that's set in front of David now, and as we go, we'll see that it's a temptation, it's a snare, it's something that is going actually to destroy his success in pursuing this cause if he falls into that snare. But he's tempted. And there's Saul. you can only go, David, if you're going to wear these things. You can only go if you put on my armor. David, in the mercy of the Lord, has the wisdom to say, I cannot go with these. Now here is an intensely personal experience in David's life. As we read between the lines here and just look at what's recorded, we have a moment in David's experience where he is perplexed, wondering, should I, shouldn't I? Will I, won't I? Will this work, will it not work? Do I pursue the cause in the way my heart desires to pursue it, or do I adopt these new methods and pursue it that way as I'm being recommended to do? And then he comes to a point where there's a decision to be made. And as so often in our experiences, at that point of decision, there's a lot of things that hang in the balance. But at this point, victory over Goliath hangs in the balance. Going through with God hangs in the balance. Victory for himself over Goliath, victory for the nation over the army of the Philistines at this time. All of these things, it all hangs in the balance. As he has to make this decision, do I go with Saul's armor or not? But as we know, the record is, I cannot go with thee. And he left them aside and he went on to victory. Now as we look at these verses, I want us just to notice first of all that there is the recognition here of an important requirement. A recognition of an important requirement. The end of verse 37, Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with thee. Going forward in this cause that David had espoused to engage in the Lord's battle against the Lord's enemies required the presence of God. The words of Saul here indicate an understanding that the presence of the Lord would be vital to the success of David's venture. There's nothing to suggest that Saul was being hypocritical or disingenuous. As he said this, go and the Lord be with thee. But nevertheless, it becomes clear that Saul's understanding of that is a little different to David's. But be that as it may, the need for God's presence is prominent in David's thinking at this time. As he approaches this battle, it is with a consciousness that he needs the Lord with him. Now he has just at this point finished telling Saul the story of how he had, in the context of saving the lamb that the bear and that the lion had taken, he indicates that it was the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion. You see, it's this recognition in David's recounting of these things that utterly takes the pride out of it. He's not beating his chest and saying what I did and how strong and how wonderful. You know how it might be. Not to disparage hunters or fishermen, but you know how the stories involved get bigger. But David is a matter of fact. But it wasn't me, it was the Lord. The Lord delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear. And He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. It is the Lord's presence that David is looking for. He is acutely aware that he needs the same kind of experience of God again. In fact, if you think carefully about what he's saying here, this is what he's insisting on. Ultimately, this is why he says to Saul, I can't go with these things, because I'm going to go leaning only on the Lord. I need the Lord with me. I must have God's presence. Now, the presence of God is something that those who seek to serve Him must experience. David is going out here in the name of the Lord. He's going out to fight the Lord's battle. He must have the Lord with him. But this is something that we can count upon according to His presence. According to His promise, rather. The promise of God can be counted on even when others around us are going to fail and not be with us. David can be sure that as he goes out to deal with Goliath, God will be with him, even though Saul will not be with him. Even though there will not be another man in Israel to stand with him, he knows the Lord will be with him. He's confident of that at this point. He says that in verse 17, or 37 rather, the Lord that delivered me, He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. He's going to be there. He's going to be with me. And as he runs to meet Goliath, he says, I come in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel. He's going confident. So confident that he can run to meet the champion. Confident in the presence of God. Deuteronomy chapter 20. There is a promise there that the Lord gave to His people long years before, as they contemplate toward the end now of Moses' life, as they contemplate going into Canaan, when thou goest out to battle against thine enemies and seest horses and chariots and a people more than thou, be not afraid of them, for the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up unto or brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. Verse 4, for the Lord your God is He that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. Notice the difference in the wording between verse 1 and verse 4. Always make note of the changes from singular to plural in the Scriptures. In the verse 1, the Lord thy God is with thee. Verse 4, the Lord your God is He that goeth with you. A promise to all in verse 4, a promise to the individual in verse 1. Many in the army, but man by man, there was that assurance that as an individual, going to fight the Lord's battles, no matter what size the enemy was, or how overwhelming, or how intimidating, and the reality of the intimidation is acknowledged in these verses, and the trembling and the fear that would come naturally. The overriding encouragement is the promise, the Lord thy God is with thee. With thee. In 2 Chronicles chapter 15, verse 2, moving on now to the days of King Asa. And he says in the prophet Azariah, the son of Oded, says in verse 2, hear ye me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while ye be with him. If ye seek him, he will be found of you. But if ye forsake him, he will forsake you. Asa is at this point actually coming back from a tremendous victory where the Lord has given him success in a battle against an overwhelming opposition. And the promise is, even after the battle, the Lord is with you while ye be with Him. The assurance is given to God's people. You take a stand on the Lord's side, He'll be with you. It doesn't matter whether it's the million-strong army of the Ethiopians that Asa faced, or the gigantic challenger in the form of Goliath that David faced. Stand on the Lord's side. Stand on His cause. The Lord has said, I'll be with you. I'll be there. Again in 2 Chronicles, in the chapter 32, this time, in the verse Verse 8, King Hezekiah, facing the might of the Assyrian army, encourages the remnant in Jerusalem, now under siege, and with him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles. And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. We can have the assurance of the promises of God that he will be with those who stand on his side, who take up his cause, who go out on a limb to stand for the Lord, as David did in the valley of Elah. David recognized he needed and could have the presence of God. Now that presence of the Lord is of course vital if anything is going to be accomplished for God. Again, this was very much in David's mind. The opposition was such that it was sheer lunacy for a lad of his stature and caliber and ordinary experience to think of taking on the giant, as Saul points out so eloquently. David, you're just a youth. You're just a young fella. This giant has been a champion from his youth. And Goliath looks down his nose at the young lad coming out to meet him, fresh-faced and youthful, and Goliath mocks him. Mocks him. And he could never accomplish anything in his natural strength, a shepherd, against the seasoned soldier that Goliath was. No, the Lord was his only hope. Verse 45 again, is this not a dominant thought in these words? I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts. That was the only basis upon which David could go to meet Goliath. He didn't have anything else to appeal to. I'm coming to you because I'm 10 feet tall and just as big as you are. No. I'm coming to you because my sword is just as big as your sword. No. I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. That's all he had. That's all he had. He recognized that this is vital to accomplish anything for God. He knows in his own heart that this is a very unequal struggle. He hasn't missed, I'm sure, the significance of the experiences that he recounts to Saul. It was a lion who went after a lamb. Well, there wasn't much doubt about what way that battle was going to end. Or the bear going after the lamb. It was a foregone conclusion. And in some sense, David is going out as a lamb onto the battlefield against the lion. But you see, it was the Lord. It was the Lord that turned the tables in that unequal struggle in the fields of Bethlehem. And the God's going to turn it again. He recognizes this vital necessity. We borrow the words of the New Testament of the Lord Jesus himself that are familiar to us. Without me, you can do nothing. And David knew it. That's very much in his mind here. But the second thing I want us to look at is a common temptation that he faced. Verse 38, and Saul armed David with his armor. Put a helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. David girded his sword upon his armor, and he said to go, for he had not proved it. Now here's where the temptation comes in. As soon as Saul says, go and the Lord be with thee. If he'd left it there, things would have just been all right. But immediately there's a distraction. Immediately there's a distraction. No sooner had this wonderful sentiment been expressed, the Lord be with ye. You're going to need him, David. You're going to need him. But Saul acts the way he does here, as it's recorded in these verses. And this represents the intrusion of a foreign concept. You think about it, this is something now that's out of place. Because Saul's counsel and action right now in verse 38 has the effect of limiting or undermining the reliance that is to be placed upon the Lord's presence. Go and the Lord be with thee. And just while you're out of here, take all this stuff too, because you're going to need that. The Lord's not enough. You need all this package of stuff. And David is immediately pressurized, let's put it this way, to dress up his reliance on God with Saul's armor. It's not enough to go just trusting in the presence of God, Saul seems to say. You need this other stuff that I can supply too. And the temptation for the Christian soldier who would stand where David stood and go to fight the Lord's battles and take up the Lord's cause, the temptation for the Christian soldier to use Saul's armor is never far from our path. In fact, as soon as we give ourselves to that holy determination, I'm on the Lord's side. I'm going to fight the Lord's battles. I'm going to take on the Lord's enemies. And we understand that I need the Lord. I need His help. I need His presence. And then the flesh will say, well, here's a few other things you need too. Here's a shopping list of armor that you need in order to be able to do that. It's not enough just to be going out here like David to stand in the Lord's name, on the Lord's side, with the simplest weaponry that only God can use and make effective. There's a temptation to add something else. Now, to make it relevant, we see this kind of thinking all around us today in the church. It's not enough just to take this book of God and preach it. You've got to add in all this other stuff, and you have got to move with the times, and you have got to make it appealing, and you've got to dress it up this way and that way. And so the list goes on. The modern church, by and large, has adopted that methodology. And Saul's armor store, if we put it that way, is a very successful business in the Christian church today. Supplying all of the things that are supposedly necessary in order to fight the Lord's battles. David is tempted here to put on Saul's armor. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, the Apostle Paul reminds us there of an important truth. Now verse 3. 2 Corinthians 10:3, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. There is a warfare that the Christian faces, a spiritual warfare. We're living in the body, we're living in the flesh, we're living in the world, but we do not fight this warfare in a fleshly or carnal or worldly fashion. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. And Paul here is addressing this warlike spirit that is to mark the child of God. A readiness to revenge sin. A readiness to live in the fullness of obedience. To see every thought brought into captivity to Christ. Seeing the enemies of God silenced and put to shame. There's a rousing spiritual victory here. And the weapons that accomplish it are mighty through God. Weapons that the world despises, weapons that the flesh despises, they're not weapons that are appealing to the world. We go about the business of fighting the spiritual battle that God has called us to with the sword of the Spirit, with the panoply of God that is described there in Ephesians 6. It's a spiritual armor that is mocked by the world, mocked by the flesh, is insufficient. Oh, these are days. And I've had it said to me, even by good Christian people, but preaching the Bible's not enough these days. It's not enough. You need to add on a few other things. You need to get geared up in what Saul can provide in order to go fight the battle of the Lord. And it's all too easy to speak wonderful words, as are spoken here in this passage, about how we need to go on, how piously they can be spoken. We need to go trusting in the Lord. But just before we do, we need to get some of that and some of that and some of that and some of that other thing. And in doing that, we take on board the very things that will rob us of the presence of God. We take on board the very things that will distance us from the Lord. There's a common temptation here. It's interesting, is it not, just to reflect upon this, that as Saul is offering all this good stuff to David, it's as if he's saying to David, David, you can only meet Goliath on Goliath's terms. You need to match Goliath in order to be able to take him on. You know, if you look in the passage, you'll see that Goliath has a helmet of brass. Goliath has a coat of mail. Goliath has a sword. Now, David, you need all that stuff too. You can't even think of going to meet Goliath except you're wearing similar armor to what he's got. Unless you're going to meet him with the same kind of weaponry and accoutrements and facilities that Goliath has. And again, is that not a common argument today to persuade the people of God to shift from the solid ground of biblical practice and worship and in Christian living? But you've got to, you know, if you're going to witness to sinners, you got to get down in the dirt with them. If you're going to reach the young crowd that are interested in music, you've got to get the music in and give it to them to get them there. You've got to match Goliath in order to take him on. You've got to have the same stuff. It doesn't work anymore just to go in the name of the Lord to fight the Lord's battles on His terms and His cause. You've got to look like Goliath. You've got to have the same stuff Goliath has. This is what Saul is saying to David. And so often God's people buy into this lie that in order to do the Lord's work, they have to follow the leading of the enemy. They have to take their cue from the enemy. Well, what's the world doing? All right, that's what we've got to make the church like that in order to get the world in through the doors. And we could almost turn this into something of an imaginary comic situation where you can envisage Saul looking around the corner of the tent to see what Goliath is on him. Well, here, David, you need to put this on. That's what he's wearing. You've got to wear this too. You've got to have these things. And that's the temptation. Saul's counsel would have resulted in David going out to the battlefield looking like Goliath, dressed like Goliath, going to meet Goliath on Goliath's terms. Now let's think for a moment about the origin of this temptation. Where does this temptation come from? Well, it comes from Saul. That's obvious enough. But let's think what's taught us here about Saul. Saul has just pronounced the blessing of God's presence upon David. Now here's the real danger. The temptation becomes so much stronger when the man who is offering him the armor is the man who has just said, "The Lord be with you." So often, the temptation to embrace carnal, worldly methodology in the battle that God has called His people to is advanced in the church by those that put a pious spin on it. I hear Saul saying, "David, you need the Lord." And it's pronounced in the form of a blessing here. "The Lord go with you." It's not easy to say to that kind of statement, "I don't want the armor that you're proposing that I wear." That's not easy to do. Because there was much to be admired in Saul's words here. They sounded spiritual. They were just what, in a sense, what David needed to hear. But along with them was this other package that proved to be a temptation. The threat, and this is always the danger, the threat in what Saul was proposing to David here can be overlooked by the fact that the threat is masked, as it were, by the spiritual vocabulary employed. "The Lord be with you." And then sliding in underneath that, "Here, put this on. You got to wear this stuff." Saul was convinced of David's inability. Verse 33. "Thou art not able to go." "Thou art not able to go." Saul was convinced that David couldn't go to this battle without Saul's help. It's really what it came down to. Even the presence of God wasn't enough. Don't you see that that's the practical implication of what he's saying here? David, you can't go. You need the Lord and you need this. You need what I can give you, as well as what the Lord can give you. Now that's the voice of unbelief. That is the voice of unbelief. You can't go. And God is not enough. You need what I can give. That's the voice of the flesh, the voice of unbelief and sin. This temptation came from Saul, who had no intention of fighting in this battle. Saul was a disobedient child of God. I believe Saul was a believer. Others may differ, but I believe the Scripture does indicate he was. A disobedient child of God, a man who had lost out with God. Even at this point already, he has turned a corner. His kingdom is, God has said, it's done, it's finished. And David is actually at this point, as you know, the history is on the rise and soon will be identified as the king in waiting. Saul has lost out with God. David can't borrow from the resources of such a man to go and fight in the Lord's battles. This man can supply him nothing that can help him. But it's always the case that those who are not involved in the real battle for God's glory and God's cause are more than ready to dispense advice and counsel to those who would like to fight it. It's the same in the natural world. The armchair generals are out there aplenty. And here was one of them. "David, the Lord go with you." But I'm almost tempted to speak sarcastically that Saul is speaking here as a seasoned failure. As one who has no intention of going to fight himself. Here, let me give you what will help you. The whole situation was ridiculous. Saul wasn't going to wear that armor to go fight Goliath, yet he wanted David to wear it. It might even have been that Saul wished David to be mistaken for him. That he, Saul, might have the glory of any victory afterwards and rob David of the triumph. It's entirely possible that wearing the king's armor, he may well have been mistaken for the king. I don't know if Saul had anything so deliberately devious up his sleeve at this point. It's possible. But certainly that's how the flesh works. It is always the flesh's desire, what worked within us, to divert any glory to itself. Look at me and what I can do rather than look at the Lord and what He has done. And that's why the Lord always works for His own glory and generally works in such a way to make sure that the glory goes only to Him. And that's why, as Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 1, He uses the things that are nothing. The poor, the weak, the feeble, the helpless, the things that are foolish. He uses things that and individuals and causes that have nothing in themselves. And if there's a victory, it's obvious it was the Lord. The origin of this temptation, Saul and all he represented, as a failure. As an illustration of the working of the flesh in the life of a Christian, we could think of the pressure of this temptation. This was the king talking. A seasoned leader in high office, a man who in one sense ought to have known what he was talking about. He'd been king for quite a number of years at this point in time. It would have been easy for David to have felt flattered by this. You put yourself in his shoes, it would have been easy to succumb to the flattery of being advised by the king and falling in line with his wishes. It probably was as fine a suit of armor as money could buy. Probably had much to recommend it. There was just so much in this to appeal to the natural pride of the human heart. Getting to wear the king's armor. Getting to wear it before all the people. Getting to wear it by special invitation from the king himself. But you know what was going through David's mind at this time? We have an insight into his thinking in a psalm that he wrote at this time. In the psalm number 9, you'll see the title to the psalm includes the Hebrew terms Muthlaben to the chief musician upon Muthlaben, a psalm of David. Muthlaben just translates as the death of the champion. And it actually is the Laben part of it does appear in the context of 1 Samuel 17 with reference to Goliath. It's the death of the champion. But in the Psalm 9, the verse 3, when mine enemies are turned back, they shall fall and perish at thy presence. For thou hast maintained my right and my cause. Thou sattest in the throne, judging right. There is a consciousness of a higher king than Saul. He has his eye upon the Lord. So often that is found to be the case among God's servants. It's when they see the King of Kings that they fear nothing from earthly kings. I think of Micaiah when he stood before Ahab and Jehoshaphat, and we're told that they were clothed in their royal robes and sat on their thrones. And Micaiah begins to speak and he says, I saw the Lord sit on his throne. And David is not flattered here by Saul's overtures because he has his eye on a higher king. He wants the Lord's presence with him. And Saul's temptation here is really just a distraction. In conclusion, let's notice the necessary discernment and faith that David demonstrates here. He engages in a quick test. A Christian is one, you know, who must put things to the test. You're called to examine things. Prove all things, the scripture says. Test them. You're constantly to be analyzing. Is this right? Is it wrong? Is it sin? Is it good? Is it evil? Is it carnal? Is it spiritual? You're constantly living in an analytical experience. And David put Saul's armor to the test. You see how it's recorded there. David girded his sword, that's Saul's sword, upon his armor, and he assayed, or he tried, to go, for he had not proved it. He wasn't familiar with it. This was a brand new thing. And so he jigs about a little bit and wields the sword and makes a few moves and sees, well, how does this handle? How does it feel? How can I perform with this? That's really what it's talking about. He is said to go. Working some of the moves with the sword and defensive moves, whatever it may have been, to get the feel of the armor. Because he hadn't proved it before. It was new. So he tested it. See what it would feel like. But David forms an impression of this armor. He had an educated instinct in this matter, and he says, I can't wear it. There's something wrong with this. I have no confidence in it. He had not proved it. I can't have confidence in it. There's a sense in which we may just say it didn't feel right. He just knew. I can't go with this. I can't go and retain the presence of God and go fight Goliath wearing this stuff. To his mind, Saul's armor was a hindrance in going to him going in the name of the Lord. And he was determined not to trust in armor, but to trust in God. Now, Saul had no confidence in that armor, so why should David trust it? Isn't that an interesting thing? Saul didn't trust that armor to go and take on Goliath. Why should David? Paul, when he was writing to the Galatians and dealing with that matter of the works of the flesh and the fruit of the Spirit, wrote this in Galatians 5:16. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Walk with God, know God, live for God, live in communication with the Holy Spirit, and you'll know, be able to identify the works of the flesh. You'll know how you're to live. You'll have that instinct, the instinct of the Holy Ghost at work within you. I can't do this. This is wrong. This is not right. That ongoing evaluation is necessary in our lives to determine and discern and distinguish between the carnal and the spiritual. David knew, I can't go with this stuff. His reaction here is based on previous personal experience with God. In the privacy and isolation of his experiences with the sheep in the fields of Bethlehem, David had proved God's power and help. And so when he puts on Saul's armor, he knows this is foreign. I just can't. I can't go with this. There is, in a sense, no book, chapter, and verse that David can turn to and say, the Lord has said, don't wear Saul's armor. But it may as well have been that, because by personal experience of God, I proved God in Bethlehem. In those episodes with the lion and the bear, I have been there. God has worked. I have known Him. Help me. This is foreign. It just feels foreign. I can't go with this. He knew God. And he went in God's name. In the Psalm 9 again, and this time the verse 10, they that know thy name will put their trust in thee. What an expression that is. It gives us an insight into the state of David's heart at this time. They that know thy name will put their trust in thee. He knew God. There is a desperate need today for God's people on a personal level to have an experience of God like David in the fields, in our daily employment. Away from observation. There may not ever have been anybody knew anything about this until David mentions it now to Saul. This might have been an entirely private matter. He may never have mentioned it before. But out there, in the quiet of his own daily chores for his father, as he looked after his father's sheep, he proved God. And his experience of God and his knowledge of God meant that on this occasion he was going to resist the temptation set at his feet by King Saul to alter his approach in this battle. And his resolve is, I cannot go with thee. I think that the sad reality prevails in the Church of Christ today that so many of God's people come to a crossroads like this that David came to, and they don't know what to do because they can't rely on a historic, ongoing, personal experience with God up to that point. They'll stand, they'll scratch their head. Do I go with Saul's armor or do I not? That's why there's such perplexity in the church today when new things are suggested and new ideas and new directions and new influences and new philosophies and adopt this, bring in the other, dress it up this way. Try to keep the gospel message, yes, but dress it up to make it appealing in some other way to the worldly mind. And God's people don't know what to do because they don't have the experience in the background, in their private life, in their work life, of an encounter with God. But they know this is of God and this isn't. But David knew. There can be no reliance on borrowed, unproven accoutrements in the battle that God has called His servants to. You can't fight God's battles with borrowed weaponry. You can't borrow the armor of others any more than you can borrow their salvation. Or borrow their experience with God. You're in the battle on your own in that sense. I know we are to fight together in a common cause, but every man fights as an individual. We cannot borrow the armor of others, let alone borrow the armor of one like Saul. Our battles with the enemies of God must be just that, our battle, my battle, your battle. And in order to fight it, you need to prove God day after day after day after day. So that when Goliath crosses your path, You have an experience of God that is fresh, up to date, and relevant, and you can fall back on and say, this is how God worked before for me, and this is how He's going to work again. And I don't care what Saul says or who suggests this or that or wants to sell me this package or that. This is how it's going to be, because that's how God worked before. That's the experience with God that we need. That's what I would urge you to seek, to pray for. Lord, in the fields of Bethlehem that I have to occupy, in the quietness of whatever it is You do day by day, I want to know God. I want to know God. Perhaps the hardest part of what David now does here is that he puts off Saul's armor. That wasn't easy to do. Because having put it on a trial basis, there would have been big pressure to keep it on. By taking it off, he was making a statement, wasn't he? Oh, no, this is no good. You can keep your armor. I don't want it. That was a big statement to make to the king. In putting it off, he was exposing himself to danger and to the assault of Goliath. It meant he was leaving aside everything except the protection that God would give him. You know how it is when you, and you've done it, I'm quite sure, many, many a time, where you come inside, you take your coat off. Because you know that if you keep your coat on and you go back outside again, you're not going to feel the benefit of it. It's going to feel all the colder out there. Or to put it a different way, you're out in the cold, you got your coat on, you're nice and warm, take your coat off. And now feel it. You're more conscious of the cold. Was David more conscious of his exposure as he went to face Goliath because he had Saul's armor on for whatever few minutes it may have been? Now he takes it off. If it had been me, I think I would have been more conscious of the fact that I have nothing to protect me from that guy except my trust in the Lord. 5 minutes ago, I had that nice suit of armor on. I don't suppose David regretted taking it off. I know he didn't. But I think if I had been there, I might have wondered, did I do the right thing? I feel so exposed now. There was some feeling of carnal safety and security in Saul's armor that's now gone. And I'm wide open before Goliath. You know, and we have been tempted perhaps to adopt carnal means of doing the will of God and advancing the cause of Christ, even on a trial basis. There are some things where you may say, well, let's try this. But you become uncomfortable with it. This is not right. It takes courage to say, that's all right, we're done with that. We're not going to do that. We must have the courage to put it away. We must have the courage to say it's going to be God's way or no way. It's going to be in the name of the Lord of hosts, and we're going to do it without Saul's armor. David said, I cannot go with these. I simply can't go. The battle was over. You think of the significance of what he's saying here? I can't take another step. I can't go. I can't take another step. The battle was over. The cause of God, in one sense, was finished at that point. And David kept that armor on. He took it off. And he went in God's name. He took the head off Goliath. He won the day. And God was honored. There is a way to fight the Lord's battles and to advance the cause of God, and it's never by wearing Saul's armor.